What would it be like to see God face to face? Just imagine what that might be like, to see God, to come into his presence. There's a worship song that says, you know, if I came into your presence, I don't know whether I would stand up and dance or fall on my face. And I'm not sure which I would do either. In the scriptures, there's several passages that talk about seeing God. One is Moses in Exodus 3, he sees this burning bush and he goes over and he says, what is that? And he turns aside to go see this bush that's in flames but not being burned. And when he gets there, God speaks to him and says, don't come any closer, you're on holy ground, take off your shoes. And God reveals himself. And it says that Moses hid his face because he didn't want to see God. In some ways, that coming close and hearing that voice and seeing that flame was enough. He didn't want to see any more. He was in some ways awed or overawed by it or frightened by it. There's another passage in Isaiah 6. And Isaiah says, I was in the temple and I saw the Lord. He says, I saw the Lord sitting on a throne, high and lofty, and the hem of his robe filled the temple. Do you understand that image? The hem of his robe filled the temple. Imagine the roof was taken off, and we saw a throne of God, so we might see the feet and the robe of God. And that robe, that the hem of that robe filled this building, just the hem. The imagery there is of God as this enormous, giant, great, and powerful God. And Isaiah goes on to say, woe is me, I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. Yet my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. And he again is afraid, he is awed by it, he is intimidated by it. He sees God, not face to face, but just a glimpse of God, the hem of his robe he sees. And he is awed by simply that. In our story today, it's the story of Jacob. And it's the story of Jacob wrestling with God, coming face to face with God. But it's a much more peculiar story than these stories I've told you about. Because the scriptures mix it up. They say he's a man, he's wrestling with a man. And then Jacob interprets it as having wrestled with God. Let me catch you up on what's happened to Jacob. Last week we looked at him and he'd just gotten married to the woman he didn't plan to marry. He was tricked into marrying Leah. Then a week later he marries Rachel. And they live under Laban's care or lack of care for about 20 years. Most of that time, Jacob is working for Laban to pay off his debt that he incurred by marrying his daughters. And he wants to make something of himself and have something for his family. So he goes to Laban and says, I want to leave. I don't have anything for me. I need to take care of myself and my family. Let me go. And Laban says, no, I'll take care of you. I'll be good to you. I'll help you. But he doesn't. Immediately he begins to trick him again. And for the next 6 years, they play tricks on one another, sort of. And God seems to overcome all the obstacles that Laban lays before Jacob. And Jacob becomes rich. And becomes rich in some ways, it seems, at the expense of Laban. And Laban really liked Jacob when Jacob was making him rich. When Jacob was getting rich at Laban's expense, his attitude changed, and the attitude of his sons changed toward Jacob. So finally, Jacob is feeling threatened, and he says to his wives, let's get out of here. Your father isn't trustworthy. And they said, we don't have any reason to stay either. Let's go. And they run away. They sneak off. And of course, Laban doesn't want that to happen, and he chases after him. And God intervenes in a dream and says to Laban, leave him alone. So they meet, and Laban leaves him alone, and they make a covenant not to cross. They've made a border, a line in the sand, and they said, I won't cross over to you, and you won't cross over to me. And so, in some ways, that chapter of Laban's life, of Jacob's life, is closed. He's dealt with his father-in-law, his uncle. He's taken care of that, and now he turns, as he's moving into Canaan, returning back home, he begins to take care of the next issue, major issue in his life, and that's his brother. Because when he saw his brother 20 years ago, his brother said, I'm going to kill you. And if you're going to return home, you want to find out if he still feels that way. And so Jacob says to his servants, go and find my brother Esau and say to him, I'm coming back home. So they go and they come back and tell Jacob, well, we went to go see your brother. He's really excited to see you, and he and 400 of his men are coming to visit. And I can guess that Jacob isn't saying, oh, great, we're going to have a wonderful party when he gets here. No, he's thinking he's bringing soldiers. This is going to be a massacre. And Jacob is afraid. And it seems for the very first time in the book of Genesis, Jacob prays sincerely and from the heart. And he says in chapter 32, verse 9, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, O Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred and I will do you good. I'm not worthy of the least of all the steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you have shown me to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two companies. Deliver me, please, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I am afraid of him. He may come and kill us all, the mothers with the children. Yet you have said, I will surely do you good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted because of their number. Jacob is saying, God, I am in a pickle. I have my back against the wall. My brother is coming and I can't defeat him. You have blessed me and I have become two companies, but I cannot defeat 400 people. And you said you would be with me. Be with me. Protect my children as you said you would, because you said they would multiply and become like the sands of the sea. So Jacob prays to God, and then he does what he can. He says to his servants, tomorrow morning when we start out, I want you to divide up in groups, and I'm going to send you with different animals, and you're going to give them to my brother Esau. Maybe that will assuage his anger. Maybe that will make up for what I have done to him. And he offers 580 animals. Anybody ever grow up on a farm here? Anybody on a farm? Did you have animals? How many animals did y'all have on your farm? Maybe 200. Cows? Pigs. 200 pigs. Mike Leonard has you beat. They had 60 cows, 600 pigs. But either way, 580 animals is a great offering. It is a wonderful blessing. It's an instant farm, instant big farm. He is offering, making an offering to his brother. He decides then to set his children and his family on the other side of the Jabbok. They've been on the far side, that would be, let's see, the east side, and they're heading west to Canaan. He sets them on the west, takes them on the west side, where his brother's over here, he's here, the river's here, and he goes back to the other side of the Jabbok by himself. And you're not clear why he's doing that. Has he said, I need to pray, I've prayed to God, I've done what I can, I'm going to go and be by myself and pray to the Lord? Maybe. Has he said, I am afraid, and I think if my brother comes, I can get away if I'm on the other side of the river? Maybe. Maybe he's saying, I want to separate myself from my wives and children, so that I think Esau is just coming after me, so he'll leave them alone and just look for me. Maybe. It's not clear. But when he gets there, things happen that he's not expected at all to happen. Listen to what happens in our passage. The same night he got up and took his two wives, his two maids, and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, and likewise everything that he had. Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he struck him on the hip socket, and Jacob's hip was pulled out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, let me go, for the day is breaking. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. Then the man said, you shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with humans and have prevailed. Then Jacob asked him, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name? And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, for I have seen God face to face, and yet my life is preserved. The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. So here Jacob is in the darkness on the other side of the Jabbok by himself, and all of a sudden somebody jumps on him and starts wrestling with him. And although he has the advantage, Jacob doesn't give in and strives and fights, and the man doesn't overcome him. Jacob is able to fight off and keep fighting until daybreak. And finally, when the man sees that he's not overcoming Jacob, he seems to mysteriously hit him in the hip and pull his joint out of socket. Now, I don't know a lot of biology or anatomy, but I don't think you can just sort of hit somebody on the hip and pull a socket out. So I take it to mean that this man has enormous power that he is withholding from using as he fights with Jacob. And this may indeed be a supernatural being. I think the Hebrew is actually Elohim, which is often a way of translating spiritual being. Whether that's God, which Jacob says, or an angel of the Lord, or some people even say, well, that could be Jesus, a pre-incarnate incarnation of Jesus. Whatever it is, that person is able to do things to Jacob. In some ways, it seems he can do whatever he wants to, if he wants to. And he asks to be let go, and Jacob says, no, unless you bless me. And so the man asks, well, tell me your name. And he says, Jacob, grasper, deceiver, trickster. And he says, that no longer is your name. Your name is now Israel. That translates to something like God fights. But that's a little bit ambiguous, because it's not clear whether God fights for you or with you. And that in some ways was the story of Jacob, that God fought for him and with him. And that is certainly the history of Israel, that God fought for them, but also against them. And so Jacob receives this blessing. He gets a new name. And in some ways, it's got to be encouragement, because it's someone who fights with human and divine beings and prevails. And that's what he fears is going to happen tomorrow when he meets his brother. That he's going to have to struggle with his brother. Will he prevail? And with this new name, he's given a name that says he will prevail. So this is a blessing to him. But as the story ends, he sees it as, he names the place not Penuel, which is its name, but Peniel, which means God's face. And he's saying, I have seen God face to face, and it hasn't destroyed me. It's a little bit like the Jim Croce song that you can't pull on Superman's cape. You can't pull the mask off the old Lone Ranger. Well, Jacob did, and he still survived. And that is encouragement. That is blessing. But what do you see going on here? What I see going on here is that this is another turning point in Jacob's life. We talked a few weeks ago about when he set out to go to his uncle's home. He went to Bethel and had this experience of God. And that was a turning point. I think this is another turning point in Jacob's life. And what I think, what I take from this is that this is he meets God. Jacob meets God, and it changes him. And then that's the way it always works. When we really meet God, we're changed. We're both blessed and broken by that experience. When you see what happens to Jacob after this, he in some ways is changed. He's not completely redeemed, and he's not made completely whole, but he's changing. And so he's not only given the animals, but he leads the charge toward his brother. Everybody else is behind him, and he's first in line. And so his brother sees him first. And the hope is that if his brother's upset, he'll get him but leave the family alone. So he's gained courage here. In walking up to his brother, he bows 7 times to his brother as a way of humbling himself before his brother. And when they get together, Esau hugs his neck and is not upset but glad to meet him. And he says, why have you given me all these animals? And he says, because seeing you is like seeing the face of God. Take these as my gift. And I think in some ways he's saying, I stole your birthright. May I return it to you. He's changed. Because when you really meet God, you're changed. You're both blessed and broken. I think of Paul. When he meets Christ, he's struck blind. And his world gets turned upside down. All that he thought about Christians and about Jesus are turned upside down. And the whole trajectory of his life is changed. And it's a blessing. He would say it is the best thing that ever happened to him. But he would also say it was painful. He had a thorn in the flesh. And he asked God to remove it. And God said, nope, I'm not going to remove it. You're going to have to live with it, because when you are weak, you are strong in me. That brokenness and that blessedness go together. I think as I look back on my life, I've had those turning points that include both blessing and brokenness. When I was 13, a teenager said, well, you know, you have to ask Jesus into your heart if you want to be a Christian. And I said, didn't know that. So I asked him in, and I think if I had died at that point and had gone to heaven, Jesus would have said, well, John, you didn't know much, but you gave yourself to me as best you could, and welcome home. But when I was 18, I'd been accepted to Georgia Tech and had gone down there for orientation, but I just couldn't go. Things were going on in my life, and I said, I'm not going. And I came back home, great alternative, Georgia Tech or home with my parents. And no job. And that was my life for a while. And it was in that, when I'd gotten my life off track, that God showed up. And really, there was a turning point in my life when I said, this is not just my parents' faith or my preacher's faith, but my faith. I believe this. This is what I believe about God. It was a turning point. And there was blessing with that, but also pain with that. It happened again when I got married. Because I got married at 32. And I'd seen other people get married. Lots of other people got married before me. And I just knew. Catherine is just so blessed to be married to me. And that lasted until we got married. When I realized I am not the wonderful husband that I thought I was. It wasn't until we got married that I realized, man, I don't know anything about marriage, about love. It happened again when our youngest was born. And when Jack was born, I realized in some ways that I could love more than I thought I could love. There was one other time, and I've told you this before, when a spiritual mentor said to me, it's sort of like the step four in AA, write down all the people you're angry with. Write down all the people that you are no longer calling friends. Write down all the things you disagree with, the things you don't like in the world, the groups you don't like, the parties that you don't like, the affiliate, whatever it is. Write them all down. And it was a long list. There were lots of things, lots of people I'd given up on, lots of relationships that had dropped and fallen aside. And I want to say it was because they were jerks. But when the list, I kept going through the list, and it was a long list, and it wasn't that they were jerks. It was that I was a jerk. And it was really this turning point when I realized I need forgiveness. I am a broken person. I would have said, oh yeah, I'm a sinner. We're Christians. We believe people are sinners. I'm just not a very big sinner. I'm a teeny weeny sinner. Until I looked at my life, honestly. And I saw my need for forgiveness. I was a Christian. But it was a turning point in my life where God showed up and he revealed himself to me. And when he revealed himself to me, I saw me, and it wasn't very pretty. It was a blessing, but it also revealed brokenness. That's what happens when God shows up. When you really meet God, you're changed by brokenness and blessing. They seem to go together. Have you met God? Have you allowed him to come in and change you? Are you willing to go through that brokenness so that you might experience the blessing that goes with it? When you really meet God, you're changed. Amen.